Autumn is in the air, the pumpkins are in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped are here to make sure you don't carve your pants, pumpkins, when you're grooming, if you know what I'm talking about. Make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and their brand new fourth generation performance package. Boys, get ready for cuffing season like no other. Ready to take the leap into fall with Manscaped? Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping using the promo code HAYES. That's H-A-Y-E-S. Get to manscaped.com. Use the promo code HAYES. You'll save 20% off plus free shipping. Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Raptors in action tonight. DeMar DeRozan back in Toronto. Feels like an eternity ago when he got dealt, man. The world has been turned upside down. And
yeah.
Raptors won a title without him and now bottomed out to an extent last year without him. And they're 1-2 to start the year. They had a big one, big win Friday in Boston. Scotty Barnes, big night for him. And then Saturday in the second half, Luka Doncic and company just decided, we're going to go ahead and steal that win. And kind of blew the doors off them. We'll see what they've got in store with the Bulls here tonight. Get to that a little bit later this afternoon. Leafs back in action tonight, facing a familiar foe, Freddie Anderson in net for Carolina. And I don't know how to describe this. I don't think it's a revenge game. The Leafs treated him very well. You know, 5-year deal, gave him good money, gave him tons of opportunity. Opportunity he did not have in Anaheim, where he was a true bona fide number one.
Yeah.
The way he went out, I think, was more self-inflicted than anything else, right? With the injury, the mystery behind it, why he wasn't going to play, and then it just became clear by the end of the road that it was time to move on. And I think it's in the best interest of the team and Freddie Anderson for him to move on. And he looks good down at Carolina, off to a really good start.
Well,
it's frustrating watching him, isn't it, Jamie? Frustrating watching him. It's like he's healthy, he's dialed in, he's like their number one there, and it's like, where the hell was that 6 months ago? And it was just kind of an awkward exit haze, and he had a, you know, for the most part, it was a good time here. Couldn't get them over the hump. He didn't play particularly well in the playoffs. I think he was, I actually think he was horrendous in some of the game sevens, but it was a weird exit. There's no doubt about it. But he was a good kind of soldier, good guy. Liked by everybody. I just got a little bit frustrated with, like, I thought somebody would have said, you know what, we got more on our mind tonight than being friends with Freddie Anderson. Like, we got to win a hockey game. That's all I wanted to hear one person say. We could care less about Freddie being in net. It's like, we got to win a game. But yeah. Like, quotes like, oh, it's going to be fun, you know, hopefully he lets me get one. It's like,
it really is.
I know. It's a different world because, you know what? It's a different world, a different landscape. You're right, because all I could think about the other night in Montreal is I guarantee you a bunch of the guys got together with KK Kotkaniemi, and they were what, 0-3 at the time? 0-4, you know, they
0-3 at that point.
And the world was drowning over there, too. Like, it is what it is. And the thing that I look at with Freddie Anderson, two things that come to mind. This market, you know, shines a light on you and very brightly. And I think for the most part in regular season, he did his job. 60 games, he was clockwork, and, you know, it was slow starts and then real strong finishes in the regular season. Carolina's a legit, really good defensive team, too. So all I could think about when he signed there this offseason, I'm like, this guy is going to have rock star numbers. Because if you look at, you know, Mrazek's numbers there, even James Reimer's numbers there, like, they've produced really solid, Nedeljkovic, really solid numbers there because they don't give up a lot of chances. You know, Roddy Brind'Amour as good as anybody. Oh, like, he has that team dialed in to the details of the game. So he was going to flourish there if he was healthy. And Hayes, getting back to what you're talking about, I have no idea what the hell was ailing him by the end here in Toronto.
Doesn't seem like anybody really
did. It just went away. Like, it was like Jack took over. Mm-hmm. Everyone's fine with Jack in the organization. Freddie was a good kind of support guy there. But it was like, what was wrong with Freddie? And we don't really know, but he's healthy now. And now all of a sudden the Leafs have a task here. This guy can play well when he's dialed in. And, you know, it's not going to be an easy game for them tonight. And, you know, pre-scouting him, they know him, and he knows them. So
it
goes
both ways.
It's a race, right?
If he is vindictive for any reason,
this is a real opportunity because he knows what's coming. Like, he knows what's happening up here. He knows the way they're playing, the weekend they've just come off, where you lose to San Jose in the fashion you do, you play the way you do on Saturday night, which was truly an abysmal effort and performance by the Leafs. And the media's back on the road. There's beat reporters down there in Carolina. Freddie Anderson knows exactly what's happening up here. He's been through it. You know, he did it for a long time. So he has a real opportunity to stick it to this team, or stick it to the fan base, I guess, if he for whatever reason feels as if he got the short end of the stick. I don't think he should. And I think he had a lot of support here. I think people appreciated what he brought to the table. The injury was what it was, and we never saw him again.
Right.
And he moved on. But it's an opportunity for him to continue to dig in. And, you know, it really comes down to how the Leafs are going to react, because they always say the right things. They said the right things 15 minutes after getting off the ice on Saturday night, you know, or their version of the right thing. Clean slate, day off in Carolina, it's all good, nothing to worry about. White noise, you know, there's always this belief that everyone else is crazy and everyone else is stupid. Meanwhile, all they've done is lose in the biggest moments and continue to...
It's a well-covered hockey team, and we just watch you play the worst possible game you can possibly play. And
of course people are going to be disappointed.
That's how we have to break that. That's what you handed us to break down.
Exactly. So this idea that everyone's out to get you is just abundantly untrue. People would much prefer to be 6-0 and, you know, dancing in the streets like they are in Edmonton. I referenced that earlier. Edmonton was in the same spot. Stars with big contracts and big expectations. What did they do? They got swept. They choked away the first round to Winnipeg. They got swept. And they had to go home, and guess what? People in Edmonton were like, what the hell was that? And all summer it was like, you better be better than this. And what have they done? They start 5-0.
Right.
Edmonton's dialed in. They look great.
The other thing I can add to, though, Edmonton went and got better on paper, too.
They did, but it's,
now,
you know,
McDavid's
got 13 points.
Let's not get too horny about Edmonton. Like they haven't won squat.
No, I know, but point is that's what the Leafs should have been bringing to the table
early
in the season, was much better performances, rock star starts, McDavid 13 points, Draisaitl 11.
Yep.
Marner should have 8 or 9 points, you know, 10 points, and off to a great start. That's what they were expected to do, and it hasn't happened. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is James Duthie. James, you've been living in the city for a long time, been covering the team for a long time. How would you describe the mood here? If someone called you in Ottawa or Vancouver or Edmonton, what kind of description would you give?
The greatest, my favorite reactions to where the Leafs are, for me, happen on Sunday mornings on the practice green at my golf course. And on this particular Sunday, there happened to be an hour and a half frost delay. If you ever had the Frosties, so suddenly instead of, you know, 5 guys on the green, there's 40 guys waiting around. And if people are saying you guys were harsh in your first 20 minutes, which I was listening to because I was out driving around, you just should have heard these guys. It was, I think, in many ways, it was worse than after the game 7 against Montreal, because of what you say. I think people want, they're still so angry about what happened in the spring and that carryover anger, and they wanted so badly to see something different in the fall, and it hasn't been there. And my theory on it is, this is not some revolutionary theory, but I really think the hangover from that loss was perhaps underrated by everybody, including the prognosticators, who a lot of people had the Leafs still, you know, second in the division or first in the division or whatever. I think that loss, and I think you guys use the word paralysis, and I think it's the most appropriate word, is that no matter what the Leafs do this year, it's going to be completely irrelevant. They could win the President's Trophy. That doesn't look likely right now. They could win the President's Trophy by 15 points, and none of it will matter. It will be completely irrelevant because the entire fan base and the rest of the hockey world says, you know, it doesn't matter until the playoffs. Show me what you do in the first round. And I think knowing that in your head as an athlete, this is not an excuse, by the way. This is just my interpretation, is that I think thinking that all summer, knowing that the regular season is irrelevant, it makes it a little bit harder to motivate yourself and get you ready for that 82-game haul. I think they're still almost shocked about what happened, and thus you're seeing what you're seeing here. Again, that's not an excuse, because you're right. You have to turn around and do what Edmonton's doing so far this season. But I really feel that that's the case, is that they had trouble getting ready for a season that was going to mean nothing, no matter what they did. But the problem is, you have to get to the playoffs before you can do the other thing, and that might be the issue as we go forward.
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of truth in that, James. I think there's also truth in the way the players and the big boys are perceived in this market, mm-hmm. where I think they're picking up on the angst. They're picking up on the disappointment, where the blue and white disease has been around forever, and it's been a shield. And a lot of times it's led to players having no self-awareness, like believing everyone loves them, when it's like, actually, not everyone loves you. Maybe the majority doesn't love you. Or I don't think that applies here. And I think the elephant in the room in the city right now is the core pieces are not that liked right now in Toronto.
Well,
they're not that likable.
You know, we're
right
in a different
now.
Age, too, Hayes, with social media and everything. And I don't pretend to know Mitch Marner well, and we might as well focus in on him because he's the unspoken middle of most of this, right?
Yep.
I don't like it when people say, oh, these guys don't care or whatever, and the stories of them golfing the day after. I don't think that's the case at all. I really think, in, you know, just conversations I've had with people that know the guy, that Mitch Marner cares too much, and he does read about all this stuff, and he does wear it like this massive gorilla on his back. And I think, you know, watching this year, you can see this. It's a complete carryover. And I think he does know. He hears the whispers, or maybe people say it to him right out front when he's out and about in Toronto or up in Muskoka in the summertime. I think that he is just carrying this around with him, and it's crippling to him right now.
I think it's abundantly clear that's the case with him. I think more so than anyone else. And I think what he needs to realize, and I'm sure he does being from here and being well aware of the way it works, is it can change on a dime. Right. Mm-hmm. If you play well, you play with a certain type of jam. And that doesn't mean hits and fights, but you play as if you're on the edge. You put numbers together, and you're a part of a winning team. It can swing with a pendulum unlike any other market in pro sports. So he
it's
needs to
so
be aware
hard
of that.
To be able to turn the switch and relax and O knows this, Noodles knows this, Hayes knows this. Hey, there you go.
Thank you, buddy.
When you get in a groove, or you somehow are playing hungover, or playing guilty, or something like that, and suddenly it just feels it and it starts to come, and you feel like you don't have a care in the world, and that's when you play the best. And you know that's what Mitch needs to do, but he can't do that right now. And so it's how do you pull that trigger to get out of your own head? And that's, you know, that's the magic to a lot of athletes who struggle. But
it's very simple, James.
He just has to
go out on the ice and be the hardest working player on the ice. Just tell yourself you're a role player and be the hardest working guy on the ice. And then you're more skilled than anybody on the ice, and it'll take over. That's all you have to do to focus. Very simple.
But if you do that, and then you don't, you know, you're pointless for another two games. Do people notice that? And they're saying, we're not paying him $10 million a year to be, you know, a hardworking guy who does
a
grind.
It's a combination of everything. Yep.
Yeah. I always found there's different phases of struggling. It's like you try that approach, and the very last one is you just say, F it. You say, F it, and I'm a good hockey player, and I'm going to go out and have some fun tonight. I don't know which particular level he's at, but that was generally my life. But the other ways work, too. If you just say, I got to go out and work hard, and you get kind of a weird break, like a forechecking hard break, you steal a puck and you score a goal, and you say, oh, that's it. That's all I had to do, and then you're back. There's all different avenues to get back. It's just whatever, which one
you want
to
choose. Don't you feel like they've tried them all?
Well, but you
I'm
need...
talking about in the playoffs, in the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I think it's the dam has to break somehow. Like, if you work hard enough, it is. We always talk about it, the hockey gods and the puck luck and all of that. Like, that'll happen. It's one to go in off your skate, and all of a sudden you just relax a little bit and start playing. Power play, all of a sudden you get a look, and it hits a skate and goes in. Like, I think it'll come. It's just a matter of when. And to your point, James, if it doesn't happen for two more games – you know, that's where it gets noisier and noisier. Like, you have to race to get out there. But right now, when I watch Mitch, you can tell he's in his own head. You can tell that he's actually thinking on the ice instead of reacting, because his instincts are as good as anybody's in the game. And there's times where I'm like, you know, he's slower up the ice. He was being more calculated with his plays. And let's be honest, they get attention. If I'm pre-scouting, if I'm Pittsburgh the other night, like, we should give, you know, Mike Sullivan and the Pittsburgh Penguins some credit there, too. They're like, you know,
that's
what?
That's tomorrow's show.
All right, fair enough.
No, but it's true, though, Noodles.
And like, if I'm Carolina tonight, you think I'm going to go, oh, well, let's let these guys walk all over them. I'm circling 34 and 16 and 91 and 88 and going, I want to make their life miserable. And let's see what they got, because I'll take my chances against, you know, Simmons and Bunting and Engvall and all them. Let's go and lay a beating on those four and see how they fight through and see how they respond.
Absolutely, and that's going to be the case on Wednesday night and then on Saturday night and then next Tuesday night. But, you know, the big boys, you better be prepared for that. You got to fight through it. You know, you think McDavid's going into Vegas and they're like, oh, let's not worry about 97. We'll worry about some other guy.
Every night.
Every night you get it. If you're the best player, they're used to it their whole lives, right? Yep. When they were 7, 8, 10 years old, they've been dealing with it. And it's just a matter of whether or not they can break through tonight. But you're right. Carolina is going to bring a system where they're going to play a predictable style. I thought Sullivan's comments after the game last night really resonated, where he talked about the success of the team and how there's an expectation to win every night, regardless of who's in the lineup, and there's no excuses. You know, okay, Sid's not here, Gino's not here. The engine keeps running, man. Like, go out there and perform.
It's remarkable that the Leafs, you know, have these games, even when they're good. Like, but look, last season was a really good regular season, but the last two have been. But, you know, you have nights like the Zamboni, the David Ayers game, and you have nights like that Ottawa game that was, what, 5-1? And they lose 6-5 in overtime. I'm sure, we pay much more attention to Toronto, and I'm sure if you went around the National Hockey League, teams have awful nights and
not
awful
collapses. Not a Zamboni driver beating you.
You're right. It just seems like in the last 2 years, the sheer volume of moments, of embarrassing moments, they just seem to lead the league in that. It's not just going back to all the golf boys around the green on Sunday morning. It's not just Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews or the criticism going everywhere. The big thing I keep hearing now, and I'm sure you're hearing it from your friends, is Lou would never put up with this. Should have never got rid of Lou. Lou would never, this would have never happened under Lou. Like, the wanting for the old Lou Lamoriello days is out there as well.
It is loud. Yeah.
Everybody in the organization is feeling it, and they all deserve it. So there's only one answer out of it, is to somehow find a way to be better.
Yeah, that's the truth, because what I will hear tonight, I'll have people tweeting me for the next 24 hours, listening live, watching live, or podcasting, that'll say, man, you're yelling and screaming about the same thing. I'm like, because the team keeps doing the same thing. It's not This isn't scripted. The team plays, we react to it. But
I think, you know what, one of the things is I wrote a column that I think was in my first book years ago called Premature Evaluation, the Common Male Problem, where we get too excited in the first 5 or 6 games of the season. And I think I made a rule to myself that it would be minimum 10 games, that I wouldn't make any conclusions until double-digit games. But I think you guys are right that the Leafs don't warrant that, right? When you have done what this team has done in the past, it's okay for both fans and people who do radio shows to react. And I'm not going to say overreact, because I don't think it's an overreaction.
It's an appropriate reaction.
Yeah, when the team has done these things. In a general, look, if Tampa's 4-6 or whatever, or some of the, you know, any team that's done well, I don't think it matters if they're 500 or if they're, you know, even 3-7 or something like that. That's where my rule applies. But with a team like Toronto, I don't think the rule applies.
Well, and you mentioned Lou, and I've been thinking about the guy above him a lot over the weekend. That would be Brendan Shanahan, who could be dealing with an even bigger mess in terms of what's going on above him. But he is honestly,
who had a worse weekend, the Leafs or Ed Rogers? Let's go right now.
I don't know, man. It was a tough
listener poll.
Very tough.
That one is tough because, Ed is trying to work some backdoor deals. It doesn't sound like too many people are paying attention to it, or it's going to actually fall into place. But Shanahan is potentially facing, and I'll believe it when I actually see it, but potentially facing something that no one in his position ever has, because there have been dark days, the darkest of days. Fans in the 70s and 80s would say, are you kidding me? This is like the Dynasty Islanders you're dealing with today, considering what they had to deal with the Ballard years. But the Garden's always sold out, and ACC sold out, Scotiabank always sold out. I don't believe it's selling out right now more because of COVID and lifestyle. I don't think people are downtown. I don't think people are comfortable. I'm not sure how many people are openly seeking out the tickets. But if he's facing a team that is dealing with a fan base that is either apathetic or really upset, and it gets to a point where there are legitimate tickets available not being sold because people are saying, I'm not going to, if it's a protest, that puts him in a unique position, one of one. Guy running this team where that has ever happened. Mm-hmm. Never happened. They've always sold out. They've always had the support. That's got to be at least in the back of his mind right now in terms of what could
real.
Be a reality here.
I think it's real because you can't use COVID as an excuse in this market, I don't think, simply because there's always been such a waiting list of people to get the tickets if they were available. And if that's not the case, that's not the case. I haven't looked around the league at attendance in other places. And maybe the Canadian cities are the only comparable, because there's a lot of places in the States that are acting like COVID doesn't even exist anymore, so it's a non-factor. But I saw a tweet that there was 928,000 viewers on Hockey Night in Canada, which was, I believe they said, the lowest rated game in the Kyle Dubas era. And I take no joy in that because it's a rival network, because we want people watching the Leafs too. That ends up spilling over to our games that we have. So, I want everybody to do well, and I want all eyeballs to be on all the games that are on right now, because it's just better for everyone. But that's a telling sign too of the number of eyeballs that probably clicked off that game very early at, 3-1 or whatever it was, 4-1. And that says something about people's level of frustrations, that they would just turn off the game at that point in time. So you're right. It's a real problem top to bottom of the organization. And, they will say all the right things publicly, that no time to panic. And the players are repeating those same messages. But behind the scenes, I'm sure they are. And, yes, it's still early, and that's true, but it gets late pretty quick.
James, I saw your commercial on The Source.
Yeah.
What do you rate yourself for your acting? Playing the video games, fist pumping?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of early Brando and mid-2000s Daniel Day-Lewis.
Wow.
Is the way I would say.
All right. Sure. Very humbled. Very humbled approach. I like that.
I don't want to be rude, but Noodles had one too, and Noodles was way better than you. And you
like any good actor, I studied, and so I watched Noodles' commercial over and over just to see some of the nuances in his faces, and I took that, and I took it to an extreme. I wanted to overact, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to bring to the people. So when they said, play video games with your daughter, or act like you're playing video games with your daughter, I just didn't stand there staring at the TV. I rocked my body back and forth the game.
I thought it was fantastic. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah.
I mean,
Brooksy wasn't in it that much.
Brooksy only got 2.5 seconds. Her people, her agency is not happy. There's a lot of fighting going on behind the scenes about that. Brooksy's my wife, for the listeners that don't know.
Okay, yeah, I know.
Just to say, one of my three children also seemed to take a starring role over my other two children. And let's just say, if anybody watches Succession, there's a lot of infighting with the kids because of that as well.
Okay. Well, wow. I like it. That's what we're looking for. It seems to be a common theme these days.
Can I leave you with one thing?
Yes.
And you probably have to go. I like to share, what's going on in my personal life with your listeners. I'm going under the knife in a couple of weeks. I'm having sports hernia surgery. Pray for Duffy should be a hashtag that is coming around soon. I'll be having a sports hernia surgery. And I was trying to get to the root of the reasoning for my sports hernia surgery with the doctor. And he was like, was there, a moment you got hurt or whatever? And a light bulb went off in my head that the moment that I did this was running the stupid 40-yard dash with O-Dog and Al's brother outside the station when they pulled me out of my car in my jeans, cold, without warming up.
Wow.
And I pulled my groin that day, and that was the day that my sports hernia developed. And so there will be loss.
It's their fault. Yeah,
Al's brother just drags everyone into the muck.
He literally does.
Picking losers, sports hernia surgeries.
He herniated me. I don't even know if that's the right word, but
it is
Al's
now.
Brother herniated me.
Wow. Hashtag pray for Duffy. Hashtag Al's brother is a demon child. I mean, Al's brother is causing sports hernias, and that's uncalled for. I mean, that I hate to hear it, buddy. I'm glad you got your golf season in, which I don't think is a coincidence.
Well, I may have scheduled the surgery.
This may have worked out perfectly. Anyway, we'll leave it there, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Pray for Duffy.
Pray for Duffy. There's James Duffy joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. Yeah, this Edward Rogers, Masai Ujiri story in the Star this morning is
crazy.
It's pretty explosive. I mean, I don't think it changes anything for Masai because the deal is done. Tannenbaum stepped in and said, it doesn't matter. You know, we're signing you. We're giving you the deal. And this is the checks and balances that come with a corporation or multiple corporations owning a sports franchise, right? Like a board of directors, where if one of the individuals or one of the parties is not a fan for whatever reason, the others can step in and say sorry.
Good luck with the PR after that. After you're the one guy that's pointed out as saying I tried to oust this guy.
Well, I've got a take on that and how it actually could end up being beneficial for the Toronto sports scene, potentially. Okay, we'll come back and get into this. Al's brother will be in the building. He will be in the house. We got at least one more pick. I think if it's a winner tonight, we roll it into week 8 and the rest is history. Shout out to Matsuyama and the Braves as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Chris Johnston will join us in just over half an hour. Al's brother will be in studio a little bit later this hour to I guess respond to James Duffy's claim that Al's brother's responsible for his sports hernia. Yeah. And O-Dog's claim that he's done with the NFL gambling and it's just not going to be a part of his wheelhouse anymore.
It's because of Al's brother, though. That's basically it.
It's kind of like what Al's it feels like.
Al's brother has really messed with people's lives.
It's like a curse.
That's the message I get.
The thing is, there are so many people fading Al's brother's picks that it's actually very charitable. Like, I think that's the way you have to look at it. Like,
I've had a person say that to me. Whatever the guy picks, I go and get a Proline ticket, the complete opposite, and I win every time.
Right. Like paying mortgages off, kids going through school. Al's brother's actually a philanthropist if you look at it the right way. So let's keep that in mind. So this bombshell story in the Star this morning about Edward Rogers, and listen, there's a whole scene going on with the hierarchy of Rogers that is not going to affect the average person at all. You know, you're not going to get any different service, different coverage. 5G isn't going to become 6G or 4G. You know, this is so high up, and we're talking massive money and power brokers that just is not going to affect the average person or the company for that matter. But there's a lot of fascination that comes with it because it's a famous family, famous company, and everyone has an affiliation with it one way or the other.
Right.
But as for the sports scene, the story that Edward Rogers, the report that he was against the idea of bringing back Masai or paying him what they ended up paying Masai, I don't think is actually that different than what you would see with other ownerships in pro sports. You know, if you're dealing with minority owners or multiple owners on a board, there's always going to be people that see it differently. Why he saw it that way, I can't have any reasoning behind that. I don't understand how you wouldn't be like, blank check, Masai, bring him back. It made all the sense in the world based on him achieving the impossible, or what seemed like it, building a championship team. And now they're back to square one in many ways and trying to build it back up. And I trust him to do it more so than anyone else. So I'm glad Tannenbaum stepped in and said, I have the power to do this as the chairman of the team, and this is where it's going to go. But him being either against Masai's hiring or paying him that much, I think that's being blown out of proportion a little bit, because I think a lot of owners do that. You know, a lot of owners are like, I'm not paying this or I'm not paying that. It's just, this is the way it can operate sometimes. And I don't think it affects Masai at all, because the deal's done. If it was going to affect Masai, he wouldn't have signed the deal, right?
Great.
Like he would have left. So clearly it's not that big of an issue with Masai Ujiri. He may not have any relationship with Edward Rogers anymore, but Masai's going to keep doing what he's been doing, and it's his show, and if any issue pops up, he'll go to Tannenbaum, and Tannenbaum clearly has the power to snuff it out. You know, yep. So from that standpoint, again, I think if you're a Raptor fan, really there's not much here to be concerned about. But where I think this could turn into a benefit for the Toronto sports scene is the report today that Edward Rodgers will remain as the chair of the Blue Jays, regardless of the power struggle and the fallout in terms of the hierarchy of the company. So if so, the question becomes, does he control the money being spent?
Right.
If he does control the money being spent, I think this could be hugely beneficial for Shaparin Atkins, because there's no better way to turn around this PR spin than saying, let's go spend. Blue Jays, I'm in. And if I'm in his PR camp, I'm saying, listen, we got to turn the tide here. We're getting crushed. Messiah is a god in this town, and you didn't want him to stick around.
Do you think he's going to say, okay, the only way for me to get back in the good books is to go spend money on three baseball players?
Do you know how quickly people would turn right back into the good books of Rodgers and the Jays and Haynes?
Dude, I love the idea, Hayes. I love your fantasy world, but maybe he just doesn't live in it. Maybe he can just say, I don't give a hoot what you think about what happened with Masai Ujiri. It's just not happening. It's a fantastic – if you're a Blue Jays fan, it's a fantastic thing to be thinking. He's coming with the heat
I'm not saying it's a lock. It's not my money. I don't have any control in this. What I'm saying is you're hoping someone gets to him and goes, listen, you still control the checkbook for Shaparin Atkins. You want to turn some things around, get down to the winter meetings and start splashing some cash.
But I thought I read a tweet off of the report saying – you know, it also could send up a red flag for somebody looking to sign with the Blue Jays and going, hold on here, the ownership at the highest level.
There's some hostility and instability.
Do you want that to be a destination where there's uncertainty? You know, that's a concerning thing, too. It actually could have a negative impact on their teams, their attractiveness
the perception of their team.
Correct, exactly. Yeah. So I hope it's the other way. I hope it's like, hey, let's go and show them that there's no problems here. Open checkbook type
of thing. You know what? That could actually factor in even more than the PR on the outside and within the fan base and within, you know, the city is the perception around the league. If it starts to become a legitimate concern that there's instability or uncertainty about where it's going in terms of the money, in terms of the budget and all that kind of stuff. Because this has got to be running through the minds of Shapiro and Atkins, even more so than Shanahan and Masai, because of what we said. They're under the umbrella of MLSC. So you got Tannenbaum and Bell, who are also in there, right, who have control and have a say in all of this. And it's become clear through this report in the Star that there are checks and balances. When it comes to the Jays, they're exclusively owned by Rodgers. There's no Larry Tannenbaum stepping in. There's no Bell stepping in if it gets to that point. So, you know, I'd be curious to hear what Shaparin Atkins think about what the next month is going to look like, because they just did the rounds a week ago, letting everyone know that they're going to go in there and pitch their plan and seek more money or a budget, try to lock down what their budget's going to be in the next month or so.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to find out.
A lot of moving parts there.
A lot of moving parts.
We'll see how it goes.
Well, and you know who I was thinking about over the weekend as well when I was reading the story this morning and then thinking about where the teams are at. How do you think Tim Leiwicki would be handling the current state of the Raptors and Leafs? What do you think his response would be to where these two teams are at?
Well, dude, he always had to pump his chest out and be like, we're going to fix this and we're going to do this and we're never going to let this happen again. I don't know. He would – I don't think very well. Not at this particular stage for the Maple Leafs anyway. He would be like – I don't know. God knows what he would have been doing.
And TFC's no better. They're in a mess too.
Disastrous. I
mean, and look what he did when he got here. He blew everyone out of TFC, blew everyone out with the Leafs, blew everyone out with the Raptors. Would he do the same now? I doubt it, because it would be his people. I highly doubt it. I think the Masai thing would have been over with even long before it got to a point where he had to sign it, you know, that late into the offseason. I think he would have got that done maybe a year before.
Right.
But how would he handle the Leafs right now? Shanahan was his guy, but I think he'd have something to say, you know, if he's being consistent about, we're not putting up with this, we're not putting up with that. Well, Leiwicki was a mover and shaker.
He was, and he was, you know, a guy that was kind of out front and center. We, in fairness, Bergevin comes out after four games and speaks and kind of shines a light on himself. Do you envision Kyle or Shanny coming out and chatting? And I know it's a different situation. The Leafs, 5 points, it's not, you know, they didn't start 0-5. Yeah, they didn't start 0-6. Like, it's six games in, but it's noisy here. That's the way I look at it. If you ask me, if somebody from back home called me and said, what's it like in Toronto right now? I'll say it's noisy. It's very noisy. People are pissed, and, you know, there's a lot of speculation.
Like, put yourself, Jamie, in the fans, right. What is he going to say for you to say, yeah, that's what I wanted to hear? Like, that's what I always wonder about the general manager having a, and sometimes you just got to come out and face the music and take a beating and then go back to your job or whatever it is. But what is he going to say that no one else, that the fans or we don't already know, that's going to so-called appease everyone? That's what I don't really understand.
I don't think anything other than the fact that, you know,
because if Kyle Dubas sat down and said, God, we suck right now, our fans going to go to work the next day and talk with their buddies at lunch break saying, yeah, I'm glad he said that. I don't know what good it does.
No, I think if somebody comes out and wants to draw attention away or at least go, I'm part of this, like I have no problem with communication. I think you try and disarm people with the truth all the time. I need to be better. They need to be better. Like, you know, it seems a lot of times that when things are at its noisiest, somebody, a leader, usually steps up and talks, whether that's the captain of the team.
Yeah, I think the problem is that Dubas would be saying the exact same thing he said before the season, which is, I believe in this group. He has to believe in this group. He's put his career on the line for this group. He said so on this show when he fired Babcock, hired Keefe. He said, I will put my career on the line in terms of my philosophy and my thinking, and he believes in them, and he has to. Because he's put all his chips in the middle, and he keeps digging even deeper in with the, you know, relaxed dress code, with the moving of the game on Friday night. I still can't believe they did that. I cannot believe the team took into consideration their players' rest schedule over the fans' programming of when the game is. I've never seen it before. I hope we never see it again, quite frankly, because of what came out of it. But it was another example of Dubas just saying, "I'm in, like I'm into the house so much. I just got to keep going back for more markers until I catch a heater and I get out of it."
All right.
Like that's the position he's in right now, and I think he'd say the same thing. Believe in these guys. Believe in these guys, because honestly, he's got no other choice.
Right.
No other choice.
You've
got to believe in them.
Let me ask you, as a, you know, we're on the outside, but as a fan, I'm going to ask, and the fans could answer this, and you guys can answer this too. When the Leafs were getting blown up the other night, how many people thought of, like, you know, people getting off the bus in sweatpants and they're acting like, people were upset about that, correct?
Oh, yeah. It's one more dagger.
But it has no factor on the game whatsoever.
Nothing to do
with the game. And believe me, I'm an old school guy. I'm an old man. And, you know, I don't love relaxed dress codes, but I live with it. Life has changed. Who cares? But how many people's minds the other night were like, yeah, you know what? There it is. Country club, get off, and hats and sweatpants and all that.
You knew it was coming.
You knew it was coming. If they rattle off six in a row and they're doing the same thing, nobody cares, right?
No, it's just
one other thing that pissed people
off. When did it become a story? It became a story when Matthews came back. Relaxed dress code became the thing. They lose to the Rangers. They lose to San Jose. They lose to Pittsburgh. It's all we've known since the relaxed dress code showed up as losing. And, of course, it's going to come up. Another example of the vitriol and the fact that people, I think fans are so angry and really hating on this team, is this John Tortorella rumor that was from fans, and it wasn't based on anything than punish them with Tortorella. Like, that's where it came from. Not that it would help the team win. I saw it all weekend, and people were writing me being like, I think they should bring in Torts. And the reasoning is that would make them miserable, and that says something about the psychology. It's not about love these guys, want these guys to do well. It's they've supplied so much pain to me as a fan. I want them to go through the pain of John Tortorella. And it's a warped mentality.
Torts is a great coach, though. That's
no,
the
I know,
crazy
but the,
part.
But
like,
the
I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying. You think he's letting, you know, whoever, Matthews, Marner off the hook if they're cheating on a back check. Or what? He's not.
No.
And, like, even Keith, the way he – on Friday night, I think it was Terry Cochon was challenging him about Nick Ritchie and why Ritchie was benched. And he goes on, he's like, well, it's not about Ritchie, it's about the whole line, talk about Matthews and Marner. And I believe it came up afterwards. I think it was Cochon that brought it up afterwards, maybe on Twitter. He's like, well, then why didn't you bench them? Like, what?
Right.
You can't say Ritchie's the same as them, but Ritchie's on the bench and the other two are playing.
Well, yeah. Imagine that guy's start, by the way, six games, and these two had the worst six games of their lives, and he's a part of it, and all of a sudden he's the worst player in the world.
Yeah.
He must be just like, what the hell are these guys up to?
Well, no kidding.
The other night, I mean, they did get a power play right in the last, what, minute? And
you knew who was going
you
over
knew,
the board.
Like, Matthews and them weren't even sniffing the ice, right?
Yeah,
like it was,
you knew that was coming.
Which was, I mean, it was fair. You're losing 7-1. You're like, I'm not going to try and get these guys out there to get a cookie or two. Like, that was, I mean, it's a statement. All of this goes away if you start, you know, you have a 4-1 stretch or whatever. Like, they can control their own destiny.
They always
control,
do. That's why they play the games.
Right.
That's right. And the same thing applies with Team Al Dog. So we'll come back and get Al's brother in here because I think they're on the verge of very positive things. I think it begins tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Yeah, it's Myers Monday, and we're getting close to Halloween, and we're way into the season now, way into the NFL season, and there's Al's brother. And I said this before we went to break there, Al's brother. A lot of people are calling you a philanthropist because they're fading your picks and they're putting their kids through college and paying off their car payments and mortgages. Do you see it that way? I mean, can you find some sort of, you know, grain of positivity in that?
I suppose if I want to live like a glass half full type of life, I suppose that's the way we could put a spin on what's gone on over the course of the NFL season. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a positive attitude. I like that. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a great weekend.
I don't know if O likes that spin on things.
No, you guys, I mean, you picked the loser on Thursday night. You were on the Rams to blow out Jerry Goff and the Lions. It didn't happen.
Tough.
And the O-Dog is proclaiming that this is the end of the road for your relationship. I've heard this before. He's like the Leafs. I mean, it's the same thing all the time with him. But what do you make of that, O?
We need Al's a winner tonight or it's over. Al's brother agreed.
I will do my best to pick the winner tonight. I would love to keep this going. I want to keep this going.
Okay.
I've dug into the information. I believe I have a winner. I've got tremendous information.
Wow.
And I believe I have a winner tonight.
You have tremendous information. Okay. So we have New Orleans on the road in Seattle. New Orleans is a road favorite. Last time I checked, they were a 4-point favorite. Is that still the line?
That is correct.
Okay. So we've got New Orleans in Seattle, 4-point favorite. Al's brother, convince yourself, not to me, not to the rest of the world.
To me.
To your boy, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill.
All right. So coming into tonight, I like the fact that they're coming in on the road because Seattle has played terribly at home. They're 0-2 on the season. They haven't been able to cover on the at home. And I like the matchup here because Seattle – they can't stop the run, which is something that New Orleans has. Alvin Kamara should have himself a field day. And if you take a look at the weather report, and this is massive, we saw last night an absolute monsoon. Expect the same tonight. It's supposed to be extreme rain throughout the night, high winds. I expect a ground-and-pound football game. And when the Saints, who have the number two rushing defense in the league, go up against a banged-up Alex Collins and company, I do not expect for that to go favorably for the Seattle Seahawks. So I think that the Saints will be able to cover the number and win this game.
Okay.
Wow.
O-Dog, your response to your pick.
Shut up. I don't have any say in this. I'm going with it. And we'll get rinsed.
Well,
okay?
Yeah, I mean, my only concern about comparing and contrasting to last night
is that everything that he just said.
Well, the dog won last night, right? The 4-point dog won last night, and now you're on the 4-point favorite tonight. So,
right, but I mean, the better team won last night, right? I think the Saints are the better team also, and the team that had the better run game and the better run defense won last night.
Right.
And that's exactly what I think the Saints have in this one. I think it's going to be a very similar game. We're not going to see much offense through the air, much like we didn't see last night. Could be a very, very sloppy game with some turnovers. But at the end of the day, Alvin Kamara should come out, have a pretty big game, and they should be able to stymie the rushing attack of the Seattle Seahawks and be able to win this one.
Yeah, I worry about LASIK eye surgery in a monsoon. I'm worried Jameis is going to be just throwing some pizzas around there tonight. But I'll take the points. I don't have a choice. You know, I don't love the Seahawks either. But if it's going to be a sloppy, low-scoring game, this kind of feels like it could be one of those backdoor covers. It could be a field goal game tonight, Al's
there
brother.
There you go.
If I'm getting four, I kind of like that.
Backdoor Brian again.
I kind of like that
it.
Idea.
Oh, man.
Well, Al's brother, I hope for your future on this show and your future in this and quite frankly my future in terms of gambling and the way this is all playing out that you do pick a winner. I'm going against myself tonight. It's in my best interest for you to win tonight because I want
keep
you to stick
going.
Around.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's just the only way to phrase it. The Monday night pick is in, and it's brought to you by BookSeats.com, custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world. BookSeats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. Team Al Dog is on the New Orleans Saints, laying 4 points on the road in Seattle tonight. The 12th man will be loud, but it's irrelevant because New Orleans is going to roll in there and cover the number.
That's right.
I like your tremendous information. It's always tremendous before the ball goes up in the air.
I'll like
that's
it.
The problem.
I'll like
that's
it at
the
4:05
problem.
Tomorrow.
Yeah,
yeah
we'll have see. Comments tomorrow, and we'll see how this game plays out. Al's brother, best of luck.
Thank you.
There is Al's brother. Team Al Dog again on the Saints tonight. Hour three coming up. Chris Johnston will join us back into the Jays, back into the Raptors, back into the Leafs, back into the NFL. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.